Welcome to the Women in Business radio show with Sian Murphy, connecting women in business around the globe.
Hello, welcome to the Women in Business radio show. I'm Sian Murphy, and here in the studio with me today, we have Lee Fletcher, who's going to be sharing her story of domestic abuse and her business. We also have our regulars in the studio. We have Laura Lawrence from Laura Lawrence Marketing. Hello, Laura.
Good morning, Sian. Always a pleasure to be here.
And I forgot to draw breath to let Lee say hello. Hello, Lee.
Hello everyone, hi, nice to meet you all.
We've got Jackie Groundsell from 1230, the Women's Company.
Morning everybody, morning Sian.
So pleased you're awake, Jackie, nice you can join us.
Oh, is sarcasm a bonus today?
It could well be, normally I hold back. We also have, I'm so pleased to welcome back the lovely Nina Christofferson, who is the producer, director, performer of the West End hit The Billie Holiday Show. Hello, Nina.
Hi, John. How are you? Good to be back. Thank you.
I'm very well. Thank you. I'm very well. So for those of you listening in, we are in our inverted commas Zoom studio. We are still in lockdown in the UK. We are not able to use our proper studio and we miss it very, very much. What that means, if you are listening in, is that there are dogs barking. There are cats howling. There's noise outside. There's roadworks. There's all sorts of stuff happening. And please forgive if sometimes the microphones don't work very well. I'm afraid that's life in lockdown, but do you know we're getting on with it, aren't we? We're just getting on with it. So also in the background, not on the show today, we have Simone Mardell, who is our production manager, who sorts out everything to do with producing it afterwards and getting it up on social media. No mean feat. So what are we going to be talking about today? Well, first of all, we're going to have a bit of a chit chat about where we all are with business and what's happening. And then we're going to hear from Lee Fletcher. We're going to hear Lee's story about her story with her business and domestic abuse, and also relaunching, starting, getting going again, and where she is now. And this is such a, can you have a topical topic? But it is a topical topic. It's something that I've been hearing quite a lot about in the news, about how, I'm not sure whether incidences of domestic abuse have got worse or if they're just being, we're just hearing more about it, because in the situation that we find ourselves in now with lockdown, well, let's be honest, tensions are high anyway. There isn't really anywhere to go. And mental health issues are becoming more noticeable, I think, and alongside of that is incidences of domestic abuse, and perhaps there is an impact on the help that you, and the help and the support that you can actually get to help you deal with that. You know, people aren't in offices, everything's taking a lot longer to get support. You know, when you're ringing people, just now I was phoning up the company that deliver my vegetables and it took ages and ages and ages to get through. Well, that sort of response time is impacting really across all sectors, and so it's going to affect the type of support that perhaps you can get from the police and the speed that you get it. Does that sound about right, Lee? Does that sound right, everybody? That, yeah, it's just a lot harder to pick the phone up and have the phone answered and somebody dealing with your issue straight away.
Somebody said we're all in the same storm but different boats.
Yes,
and I think that really sums it up.
Yeah,
I'm in a dinghy.
You're in a dinghy.
if that's the case, I'm in a dinghy, and I have one paddle.
Yeah, oh, I think I must be in a bathtub.
You're in a bathtub. I'm not quite sure what
the
I'm hole. In. I think I choose the teacups. Actually, I think they'd be quite good. The teacups at Disneyland. I'd quite like to go on those.
Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
It would, wouldn't it? So that's going to be. Our main theme today is hearing from Lee, who also, it's about getting Lee's story out there as a positive, about how it is possible to start coming out of the other end and bring things with you that perhaps you didn't have before. So, but I do think we ought to have a little bit of a round table first off about what's been happening out there. You know, I really wish I would prepare this. I really do, because
no,
we've got. I don't know. I do. I do. I, if every week I mean to do this, every week. And I'll tell you what, perhaps this is a little bit about routine, because it's now coming up for a sort of nearly a year since we've been able to run the studio properly, since we've been able to run the radio show properly. But I had a routine. So it would take me an hour to drive to the studio. So I would get up, I'd have my bath, I'd do my stuff, I'd leave, I'd get to the studio probably about an hour and a half before I had to go on air. And that is when I would start to do my preparation. I'd start to think about, what do I need? What are we going to talk about? The guests would probably arrive at the studio about 10:30, half an hour before we go on air. I'd have a chat with them. We'd agree a general direction of travel. And that was my preparation. And now I get up, I run around a bit, I have an argument with the cat, I might or may not have some breakfast, and then about 10:30 then I sit down and I've done nothing really, and then I print out something, and so for me it's been nearly a year and I haven't nailed that routine. And do you know, sadly, it's just dawned on me as well that that's why it's all going horribly wrong, is because I've never built that routine back in. So I wonder what's everybody else's take on that, because it's a routine. I have to say, it's not, you know, the previous routine was, I didn't sit down and go, okay, let's build in this routine. It happened, it was there and it worked. So what's other people's take on perhaps routines? Let's start with Jackie. We'll start with you.
Yeah, my background's IT training, and I had to be very disciplined in that process, because I was in several different places and during the day and during the evening. And in the evening, one evening a week I was at Croydon College and the other evening I was at Lewisham College, and my big fear was I'd end up in the wrong place, because obviously they weren't close together. So my discipline was that all my lessons, and I had proper lesson plans and everything, were all prepared the day before, so at the latest. So everything was ready. And on the particular day that I had to go out, I just picked everything.
You could just slap her, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm a day before girl, if poss.
Okay. So actually that sort of works, because if you always did something the day before, you're going to continue doing it the day before, aren't you, regardless of what happens. Anybody else got a take on routine, and perhaps to help people identify where maybe they had a hidden routine, because that's what it was, wasn't it? It was a hidden routine. It was a routine that worked, but I hadn't established it formally. I hadn't made a decision about it. It just worked. And now that it's gone out the window, the trigger, which was getting in the car to drive to the studio, now that the trigger stopped, guess what? The routine stopped.
It's and it is to do with location as well, because you know, the Thursday day morning, and Sian would get into the studio and I'd be all hyped up, because I used to get a buzz out of the whole studio thing. Do you remember, Sian? I'm just like a jumping jelly bean, you know. And and then not having that, and always Thursdays was the one day that I didn't think about my businesses, because it was show day, which is very different. Whereas now, even before, you know, we come on to doing the Zoom now, it's you know, I'm sort of stopping to work. Whereas before, my mind was always free. But it is this whole thing, you know, Sian, you mentioned about jumping in the car. And I remember that the biggest hurdle I found from being, a corporate lady working up in London and doing the commute, to suddenly, you know, commuting across the landing to the spare room where my office was. And I missed reading the Metro, that really trashy free paper. I missed it so much, and my husband at the time would try and get me a Metro as often as he could, but it was never the same, because I couldn't follow the daily updates from the letters page, and I hadn't realised how important this sort of element had been to me. So I tried to find, you know, and that's also downtime. We don't give ourselves the downtime.
Yeah, we don't. And that was the same for me. I'd drive an hour to the studio, I'd be out of the office, I'd be away from that sort of work stuff. There wasn't anything else to do, because I was driving.
Yeah, and it
you know, I'd get up, I left, and I'm driving. And then I'm on the way back, I'm doing the same thing. But guess what I'm doing? I'm thinking about the show. I'm thinking about what happened. I'm thinking about particular angles and things that came out of it that could perhaps go into next week's show or could be written up for the production, as that sort of, you know, then goes through the production cycle in the afternoon. I'd be thinking about the key points that came out of it. And that's gone now. Mm. So my trigger, getting in the car, now gone. I need to build something back in so that I have my proper preparation time, because we always used to joke, didn't we, Laura, that I never did any preparation, that I came in and I had stuff on the back of a fag packet. But in actual fact, I did do preparation.
The preparation
was in my head, and I wrote down those few notes. That was all I actually needed to do. So I need to build in a routine properly. Nina, have you got a take on routine?
My routine hasn't changed, but the end result has. So I still get up really early, I still run in the morning, I still do some vocal exercises, but that was all driven and then going into doing lots of meetings, preparing for a show and everything. But the reason why I'm in a dinghy is because I have a show, but there's nowhere to put the show, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because live theatre is shut down and there's nothing happening, and we've been put on hold yet again.
Yeah.
So every time when I set up my routine and I'm ready to go, and I think, yeah, great, we're opening back up, we can go back into the theatres. We go in, and then within a week or two, we're back out. So my routine has been impacted heavily by what's going on, and there's no through line. And all I can keep doing is just keep doing the work behind the scenes and the preparation. So for me, I have to keep the preparation up. Otherwise, I won't have the stamina to do a good show. I won't have the stamina to put the moving components into place. So it's a case of I can't really let myself out of that routine, that stagnant routine. And I say it's stagnant because there's no end result. So you're doing stuff without any way of doing anything. But it will come. It will come. It will get back out there.
And what you were saying there about the shows, actually, life has got a lot easier for me in the last 3 to 4 weeks because I run events. That's primarily what I do. I run events. I run physical face-to-face events.
Yeah.
They have a really good energy. They run every month. Some of them are quite small, may have 30 or 40 exhibitors. Others are quite large with a couple of hundred exhibitors. And all of the start-stop, which is nobody's fault, I'm not blaming anybody, but all of the start-stop meant that I kept reorganising the events. Okay, here we go again, all the risk assessments, but getting the people together, and then it didn't happen. And then reorganising the events. And that happened so many times, and now I've drawn a line under it. And it's only now that I'm saying, actually, now I can start building a routine back in. Because all the time that you're reacting, it's actually quite difficult to get a routine going, isn't it?
Yeah,
and so it's been quite chaotic. But now I've made a decision that I'm not going to keep reopening the events. I'm taking them online. And then when I know I can definitely open physically, that's when I'm going to definitely open.
Perfect.
I reckon we're looking at 9, 10 months January before events can run properly again. Once I made that decision, life has actually got a lot easier.
Yeah.
So I sort of said, actually, I don't care what everybody else is doing. This is what I think is going to happen. This is my decision about the events.
That's it. You're in control now.
I've got the control back. And once you do that, I think it's a lot easier to start building back in that routine.
That's it. Because that's why I say I'm in preparation mode, because I'm preparing for the future of when we actually do get back out there, rather than the start and stop, this knee-jerk reaction that, you know, has no end date. That's why I say it's stagnant, because if we react to that, it means that we're not really going anywhere, and we're not really preparing for the real big picture of when we do come out of proper lockdown and we can actually get on with the business and we can drive that home. Yeah,
it's making that decision, isn't it? The decision is made. Yeah. I'm not running events until I know I can run events, and then I will schedule the event. Lee, I would think what's happened to us has largely been sort of driven by COVID and changes in our business circumstances, whereas your change in routine, if you were a routine driven person, must have been sort of thrown up totally in the air. And we're going to come back and hear. No, actually, I'm going to make a different decision now. We are going to introduce you properly and hear your story. And then as part of what happens, it may well be that we're going to come back and hear how your routine changed, whether that was a blessing. And you said, thank goodness for that, my routine has changed. And whether you've replaced it with something else or whether it was actually so far in the background that it didn't matter. So let's welcome Lee Fletcher, who is a survivor of domestic abuse. And she's going to tell us about that sort of in a moment. Her business moving forward is ad hoc project management. So welcome, Lee. Tell us your story.
Well, I'm in a refuge now and I've been here since September. During COVID, I had to leave an abusive relationship very quickly. I was in some immediate danger and I had to call the police. And they came and, I kind of got taken away. And you go through a routine when you're, you're reporting domestic abuse and you do an interview and everything. And I was placed into a hotel for a week by a charity, Leeway, which is based in Norwich, Norfolk. And they then, between the agencies and the police, they found me a refuge place, so I'm now safely there, and I've been here ever since. And part of leaving was actually taking back my power and taking back my control. It was a very difficult decision. I'd been in the relationship for 18 months. During that time I'd been working as self-employed. I had a small business support business called Girl Friday, and I was basically helping friends out with their business during the COVID period because a lot of them had furloughed staff. So I was kind of in the offices running the show. I mean, one friend's business managed to get two other businesses established because when one area of work declined, they were able to kind of focus on developing two other areas, which I helped with. But then because of the nature of my relationship and the contract came to an end as well, I found myself at home for a few months dealing with the abuse. And I was due to start my master's in September. And on the day that I was due to actually start my studies, I actually left and I just literally picked up my car keys and walked out with nothing. I walked out with nothing. I left it all behind. He was down in the kitchen, I was up in the bedroom. I gathered a toothbrush and I just literally put that in a little bag and grabbed my keys and walked out up the road because cars parked away from the house. And he was standing there washing the pots, and it was really a really bizarre, strange scenario that I got out. And I haven't looked back since. I've come into a place of safety. And since I've been here, this is my first time really in a kind of a domestic abuse situation and also in a refuge. So it's been a real eye opener, and it's a real, you get to see how it really is, going through the processes and how you've dealt with. And there's lots of pluses with the help that's out there, but there's also areas that could be improved upon. And this is one of my intentions, is to actually kind of raise these concerns as well, having been through the processes and dealt with the agencies and the services that are there, to kind of, there isn't really a voice for people. We hear about the domestic abuse happening, and in COVID-19 at the moment it's increased by something like 35%. The problem is already there, but at the moment we've got victims that are trapped in the homes. And I think I saw some statistics recently. I heard a few days ago on the news, there's been something like 130,000 phone calls made recently, and there's only like 3,000 spaces in refuges. So we've got a real shortfall. There's a real shortfall and a real need for, the help people. And also you know, the services that are dealing with, you know, domestic abuse at the moment are so overstretched and so underfunded. We've got the domestic abuse bill on the horizon. You know, there's lots of positive changes coming along. We've got the victims commissioner. There's a domestic abuse commissioner, all on Twitter. You know, there's a lot of good publicity around, you know, all of this. But when you think about it, like one in three women in the UK are suffering from abuse. And two women a week are dying, you know, at the hands of perpetrators. And these statistics shouldn't be happening. You know, that we should really, you know, be doing what we can to try and help these women, men and children that are in these situations. Because it isn't just women, you know, it's men, it's children, same-sex relationships and whatever. But on the back of this, sorry, did you want to get a word in there, Sean?
I was just going to ask.
Once I get talking, I can go to.
No, it's all right. What I was going to ask was if you were happy to perhaps describe some of the things that you had to deal with that were perhaps didn't involve actual violence, because sometimes when I'm talking with women in business, they're saying things to me as reasons why they may be giving up their business, actually, and continuing, is because they're effectively keeping the peace. And things are happening where there's no hitting involved. There's no real threatening involved. What there is quite a lot of passive aggressive stuff going on. Yeah, so this could be it can start off with, you know, there's a situation where a woman has perhaps left her job. It could be that she's retired or alongside a job has started up a business. Along with that business, if there's a partner, along with that business comes other things like perhaps more control, more financial freedom, meeting new people, going out and doing different things. And what I've heard, the stories that I've heard, which say quite common, is not outright threats, not hitting, but this sort of passive aggressive sulking, for instance.
There is a term for that.
Little barbed comments like, oh, there's no dinner again, or well, I've had to do that, or look at the mess in here. Just generally being really obstructive. And some people may say, well, okay, that's not abuse, that may be not talking about your problems, but I think, and perhaps I'm wrong, that actually there is a very fine line, and that sometimes without realizing it, that line is crossed.
Because it's a sliding scale,
isn't it? I don't think it's a case if you start a business and somebody hits you. I think there's a sliding scale where perhaps you don't realise stuff is happening and the control is increasing and increasing and increasing until you're suddenly in a situation where it's untenable and it is abuse. But by ignoring, glossing over perhaps what could be termed little warning triggers, you miss them, and suddenly you find yourself in this sort of really awful situation. Is that about right?
Yeah, there is a term for that. It falls under coercive control. You know, that can be quite extreme, but it can also be very subtle.
Can you explain a little bit about that coercive control?
It's basically where a partner, an abuser and a partner. So an abuser will use very subtle psychological, emotional, mental abuse tactics, such as gaslighting, or, you know, that there's a stonewalling. There's a number of them out there. And it's basically to reduce, you know, the partner's confidence in themselves. It's to undermine them, it's to make them feel less than they actually are. And what I experienced when I started my business, because I actually started it in February, just before COVID started, that, you know, I wasn't being supported. I was actually being undermined, and every achievement. And I was really proud of what I was doing, because it was my first attempt at self-employment, and I was sustaining myself, and I'd got an income, you know, and I'd got work coming through the door as well. People were pleased with what I was doing. And it's, why are you doing that? What's that about? That's not really worth anything, is it? You know, you get these kind of confidence knocking, undermining, and kind of like, well, you know, because the focus was on me and what I was doing and not on him. And I think a lot of women will find this, and men with abusive partners, that basically it's about putting you down and, you know, using that in a way to kind of elevate their position within the relationship, so they retain the power and you feel less than you are. And a lot of women, you know, will think, oh, you know, he's not very happy, he's not pleased with what I'm doing, you know, I better think about whether I should be doing this. And it's kind of, even with my studies, when I, you know, I announced I was going to be doing my master's, why are you doing that? What's the point in doing that? Being a project manager, it's going to take you years, you know, before you get anywhere. And I'm prepared for that. You know, I know it's going to take me a little while to get established, but at least I've got the intention to get off my backside and do something with my life, you know. And I thought, actually, that you should be quite pleased with me. You know, this is about us as people and my self-development. But no, some people aren't very happy because they don't like the status quo to change, and they prefer to keep things as they are because they're quite happy with that, even if it's to the detriment of a partner, you know. And there are red flags.
And these comments are very, they're just outright negative. And I think it's important to distinguish between a partner saying, oh, okay, you know, why are you doing that? And perhaps having what we'll call an adult discussion about the way forward for you as a team. And, you know, is that the right course? It could be something else. Have you thought about, you know, that's very different, isn't it, to, well, why are you doing that? That's of, you know, that's of no use. What difference is that going to make? But sometimes, especially if you have previously respected somebody, you sort of take it on board, don't you?
Yeah, I think if you're in a relationship, obviously you love and care for your partner and you take it on board. But actually, it could be a very subtle form of abuse. Yeah. And you might not be aware of it. I mean, sometimes it can be so subtle and things can be said in such a way that it can sound well-meaning, but actually it's very undermining when you think about it. Oh, should you be doing that, darling? You know, you know, I like you being at home cooking the meals and there for me when I come in at night, you know, and things like that. It can be a very, and then you'll sit and think, actually, oh, I don't know about that. But I think actually, if you trust your intuition, it's usually right. If you're feeling you're walking around on broken eggshells, that's often a very, you know, a red flag.
I tell you what, that's it. I think that's the key, isn't it? Is when you feel like you're on eggshells. So my previous partner, I have not been in an abusive relationship. My partners have been very supportive, but I know of two things that did happen where two people who were very close sort of start to take, you know, they do take on board. So I was terrified of spiders. My partner was terrified of flying. He became scared of spiders and he was a big burly fireman and would jump up and down shrieking. And I became scared of flying. But it's because we're together, we respect each other, we believe what the other person says, and we took on each other's fears. And so I think when you're living together and you do love and respect somebody, you sort of take on board what they're saying and what's coming towards you. And if you're not careful, you take on their crap, actually, don't you?
Yeah. I think it's, yeah, there is a fine line, though, between, you know, partners becoming one and copying each other's traits. And that's quite charming, you know, to actually overstepping the line and becoming a form of.
Oh, yeah. No, it was just really, it was without unwittingly, you sort of start to take on others' traits and you start to trust somebody. I'd never been frightened of flying, but it was a case of, oh, well, he is. Perhaps there really is something to be worried about. And it was the same thing. It made no sense, but it was about people connecting. But had that have gone perhaps further, had the relationship, we were together for 25 years, had he had stepped over a line, I probably would have gone with that for quite some time because I trusted him.
Yeah, the thing with abusive relationships, you become conditioned as well. You actually anticipate your partner's upsets and anguishes at you, and you actually compromise and accommodate to minimize their need to be upset with you. So you'll find that you're actually doing things and saying things that you probably wouldn't do. Your boundaries might drop, your standards might drop, and before you know it, you know, you're talking to a friend and you're saying, oh, this is what's happening, and they'll look at you and say, how on earth,
yeah,
why are you accepting that, you know, because that's not right. And then you start to think, and right, you're kind of like, oh wow, you know. But usually you have an inkling and there will be red flags. And
so the warning signs for somebody who's perhaps in that sort of situation where they're not quite sure, they may not even have thought about it,
I would advise the
trigger is, do you feel like you're walking on eggshells?
That's
are you doing stuff to keep somebody happy?
Yeah, that's another.
And perhaps that horrible feeling in your gut that you get when stuff just isn't right. So Lee, yeah, tell us if you can. It started off with this unpleasant comments, passive aggressive, even seeming sort of quite nice, but questioning and actually being really divisive.
Yeah.
But you're in a situation now where you've had to leave and you've been put somewhere for your own safety. So I'm assuming at some point we went from, you know, nasty barbed little gaslighting type comments to actually physically hurting and threatening. What happened?
Well, you know, you meet someone and you think, oh, you know, as you do, they're nice and fine, and it kind of starts to creep in. I actually gave up my job and my home to be with him after a period of time of dating. But when I think back, actually, the red flags were there because he would be upset and he'd get angry, and I'd kind of be, whoa, you know, I'd be, wow. And I would say something and then I wouldn't say it again because I knew that was upsetting. With me, it was more emotional and more sort of psychological abuse. I didn't really endure a lot of physical. I had a little bit of financial abuse.
What do you mean by financial abuse?
Well, when I was living with him and I actually had given up my job, so there was a period of time where I was looking for some part-time work.
Yeah.
He was renting a place privately and was insisting that I pay, you know, a contribution, which is fair enough. But okay, because I hadn't got an income and he'd asked me to give up my jobs, I felt that was a little bit unfair. So I quickly got a couple of part-time jobs and then I started giving half of what I was earning. And then this was when I kind of got an offer of work and I thought, right, on the back of this contract, I can set up my business. So then when I did, he was really unhappy about that. He didn't want me working with guys. You know, he didn't want me. I was getting up early and going into work and virtually being away all day, and he didn't, you know, that wasn't liked. And it was just, it went from one thing to another, and
it was sort of a no-win situation, wasn't it? It was you know, I want the financial contribution, okay, so you take some little part-time jobs, you make the contribution, you say, well, actually, yeah, I need to improve this situation, so you look to improve a lot financially, and instead of being pleased, actually, oh, not pleased, because the control is going.
Yeah. And you know, once I'd started to get my business off the ground and was turning things around, and I started doing art classes, I started going out and meeting people because I was in a new area. Again, you know, this is someone that stayed at home all the time. There was, not very happy about that. And it was, you know, it just went from bad to worse really quickly. I actually was attempting to leave. And each time I'd got somewhere lined up, I was being love bombed. Oh, I love you. I don't want you to go. You know, let's try again. And I stayed. And then one time it got so bad, I just literally vanished. I went and stayed with a friend. I removed all my belongings and vanished and gave no forwarding address, no, you know, blocked on every social media and phone. But then he tracked me down, and for 4 months he love bombed me, and he became the person that I wanted. And then I moved back in like a fool, and very quickly he reverted back to being who he was. And it was only a few weeks later, probably about a month or so later, that I actually left again, because I felt actually in fear this time. I felt very fearful. Something had changed. Everything had escalated. It was, everything had gone from like 5 to 10, you know, with the abuse. And then I just, one night I just thought, I can't deal with this anymore, you know, this isn't living, and I don't feel safe. And when you get that gut instinct to go, I would say to anyone, if you really feel that, leave. You know, possessions are worth nothing when your life is in danger. So that's a strong message that I would say to anyone if they're feeling threatened in any way that their life is in danger or their children's.
I love that expression, love bombed, because I could see it being really, really hard to resist. You know, I don't mean to make generalizations, but I think we all want to be loved, we all want to feel we belong,
totally.
And having that romantic aura around you must be very, very difficult. But they know what they're doing, don't they? I think this is what we would call a narcissist, isn't it?
Yeah, that was when I started doing research on abuse, and then I started to see certain traits with him, and I was starting to get informed. And when you're informed, you have, you know, knowledge is power. And I actually started to say to him, I think you're actually abusing me. And he hated that label. And there was one time, you know, we were out with friends, we bumped into friends, and his character changed. And this is another thing abusers are very good at. For whoever, you know, you get the abuser, a charmer, and they're a charmer with someone else. But with you, or, you know, your family or whatever, they revert to who they really are. And they're very clever. Lots of people blame, you know, mental health issues, alcohol, addictions, but actually an abuser is an abuser, and they make a decision to be an abuser.
I think this has raised so many issues about being a woman in business. And I think it's some of the things we're going to have a little bit of a around the table for a few minutes in a moment. I think it's some of the things that a lot of women in business come across. It can sometimes be from parents. It may not go as far as yours has gone, but that I think we come across it. It could be children, if you like, emotionally blackmailers, but mailing because there's so much time out or doing stuff or having to go to a childminder. And I think across the board, and I think there are some warning signs there where we start not being who we are. And not saying what we want and not sticking to our own truth.
Yeah.
And perhaps if we did that sooner, all of this would have erupted a lot quicker.
Yeah. Could I just say, Sian, if anyone is in any doubt, you know, there's Women's Aid and Refuge are two good starting points online. If people want to check out whether or not they are actually suffering from abuse, because they often have question marks, you know, have a look online, and there is a lot of support. And you can answer those questions, and you can talk to the helplines as well. There's a lot of help and support.
Yeah, because I think if you've started a business, and I think, you know, starting a business is very often a trigger because it's a big change, isn't it?
Definitely.
If you've started a business and you're not getting the reactions that you perhaps expected to get from friends, family, partners, perhaps it's at that point that you need to, instead of changing yourself and diminishing yourself and stopping your business, actually start asking questions. What, definitely. Laura, Nina, Jackie, what do you think?
Yeah, thank you, Lee, for sharing that with us, because I'm sure it was quite painful for you to do that. I know a little, because my daughter, I've touched on the other day, came out of a very physical abusive marriage. God knows why she married him in the first place, but there we are, that's another story. And she has never told us the whole story and why she actually left in the end, because she'd had to go, as I'm sure you've had to with Lee, to different authorities and different people to tell your story. You know, what's actually happened to you, that she just got to the point where she couldn't repeat. She couldn't say it anymore. She just, you know, even now, she's got herself a job. I'm really proud of her. She's really gone and moved up the scales a little bit. So she's got a job and she's working, but there's still problems there. So I think, as Shana's highlighted, and also you, Lee, there is much more out there. I know from my lawyer friends, family lawyer friends, that January is always their busiest month because people are together ordinarily pre-COVID, in a situation together where they perhaps haven't seen each other, or they're enclosed and they're not working, etc. So January is the time where people reassess and get to the, this is it, this is enough. And it is, it's, you know, boiling point, because people are enclosed where they've not been enclosed before. So I think well done to you for achieving what you've done. And
thank you.
Yeah, no, well done.
Thank you.
I think it's really resonated, a lot of what you've said, actually, because I was in a, when I started my business sort of 15 years ago, I was in a similar situation. And, you know, my partner had been like, oh, you're going to be working from home. Oh, great. You can do all the housework then. Whereas before we were sort of more, a little bit more equal. And yeah, and it is, you know, when he was coming home from work, you know, I was very much in love, but then I'd get all the butterflies because I never knew what sort of mood he was going to be in. You know, I'd sort of have dinner ready on the table and trying to juggle all of my work around. And I ended up sort of, you know, working till 2 a.m. and then getting up at 4 a.m. again, just so that I could have a bit of peace and quiet and concentrate on things that needed to be done. But it was, yeah, when you mentioned, you know, getting so nervous, I mean, I sort of went down to about 7.5 stone for a few years, because even though I was eating so much, my nervous energy was just immense. And when you're trying to launch a business and having that sort of very negative sort of comments all the time, and, you know, every time I was going out business networking, I had to check in to show him that I was at a networking event, not having an affair, which I never did. You know, and it just sort of gets you down, you know. But yeah, you still sort of, if you can get the strength to sort of get your business doing. And it took me 3 attempts to leave, you know, and I eventually did. But yeah, it's so emotionally draining. But it's, I always thought it was me, you know, so you don't really think. And particularly when they're lovely and all your friends say, oh, I don't know why you spit up, though, you know, that was always my favourite one of your, you know, your relationships.
Because he's lovely.
And it was terrible. I'd get to the point where his parents would come and stay for a number of weeks every year, and I used to get excited because he obviously had women issues, you know, and so his mum would then get the brunt of a lot of his anger, and it was shared. It wasn't just all on me, you know. A lot of people would say, oh my god, my in-laws are coming to stay for, like, you know, weeks on end, but I would be so happy because I knew then that I would have some pressure, you know, sort of off of me, and I could, you know, sort of get cracking. And
I'll tell you what, it sounds really obvious when you're sort of sat, you're saying this now, and it seems so obvious, thinking, well, why would you put up with this? But you do, don't you?
You do.
And one of the things I've written down here is that, and it's wrong, actually. I think it's wrong. I've written down, starting a business can be a trigger. But what I think is actually happening is that when you start a business, it actually exposes, it reveals something that was already there.
It's
exposing it. It's exposing an issue that is there with this other person and what you are doing and their control over what you are doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, I totally agree with that.
And that if you do something like that, so if you do start a business, and, you know, we're women in business, so you start a business and you're getting this stuff, which can seem quite small, can't it, really? Oh, well, I had to do the washing up. It's not like, you know, you think, oh, okay, dumpling, all right. But it's not like a major issue, is it? But it is.
Yeah.
It is a major issue.
With my daughter, she got qualified as a bookkeeper.
Yeah.
And was doing some business work. And he said, but I'm the man of the house. I bring the money in. She doesn't need to work. And so she stopped.
Yeah.
She was got to the point where, although prior to that she was quite a strong person, she got so browbeaten by him, she just stopped. And it just went from bad to worse, really.
The psychological abuse, the emotional abuse, is the one you can't see, but it's often the most damaging, and that's what takes the longest to recover from.
So
but no, you know, I'm not saying that any other form of abuse is any less worse, but Yeah, it's
a very good person. Because it's a cumulative, isn't it? Every little bit keeps chipping away at you.
Yeah, definitely.
And you don't even see it. You don't, like you said, you don't see it coming on top. No, bang, don't. It hits you. And then sometimes you don't even know how to get out of it because you don't even know where it started. So it just takes that time to unpick. And every time when you keep going, trying to get out of it, it keeps sucking you back in because there's a allure as well as the attraction to being with that person. There's something that happens. You get this. I think I heard several stories about people who've been abused, that sometimes when it happens, there's something attractive about that abuse, something about that person wanting your attention as well. So there's so many different levels to it. And you know, at what point does the abuser sort of look at getting help for themselves to stop that pattern as well? And, you know, how can we find ways to help the abuser to stop, feeling so down on themselves that they feel they have to take somebody else's worth away from them, and they don't know how to balance within themselves, you know.
Sadly, abusers recovering is very, very low. The percentage is like 1%, and they have to want to do it. Nine times out of 10, they will just go on and find another victim, sadly. Yeah.
So, has he tried to track you, Lee?
Sorry?
Has he tried to find you?
Hopefully she doesn't know.
When I left, I was stalked in every possible way on social media. The phone calls were constant. I think it's only because I had to get the police involved. You know, he got his collar felt, and that's ongoing. That stopped because, you know, that I think that's the only sort of authority that he would listen to. Because everything's at risk, isn't it? So, you know, I'm glad in a way that I took those steps. I thought about it numerous times before because it was so bad that you sit there and think, I love this person. You know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to have to do this. And you talk to people, and you know, some of your friends, you do find out who your friends are as well. You know, they're like, oh no, everything looks fine. You know, but. Mm. The first thing is you have to think of yourself and your safety and do what you need to do, definitely. I'd say that to anyone.
Yeah.
So I want to have a little bit of a quick fire round because we've not got an awful lot of time left, actually. And I'm going to focus on you, Lee, because one of the things that I asked you before you came on is, are there questions that people should ask about domestic abuse or coercive control but don't? And you put how, what, why and when. What do you mean by that?
Well, how is it happening? Why is it happening? What can I do to get out of it? And when?
So basically they're not challenging, I might say they're not challenging themselves, they're not asking themselves questions to actually get themselves out of this situation.
Yeah, you've got to ask those questions, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, one of my projects that I'm hoping to do is to raise awareness of domestic abuse. And I want to create an app and get an online platform. And I want to get, you know, I want to get commercial support. And I'm applying for funding at the moment to get this off the ground. Because at the moment, there's lots of services and agencies out there, but there's not a voice. You know, and women, when they go through it, the last thing they want to do is stand up and talk about it. You know, they're too busy dealing with what they've had to recover from. But for some reason, I just feel so passionate that I just want to help if I can in some way. And I've got the backstory as well. So, you know, I know what I'm talking about.
You're walking the walk. I'll tell you what, let's do some tips here. And this is a difficult subject to do tips on, but I think from listening to what everybody's saying, everybody, including Jackie, Nina, Laura, and myself, even if we haven't experienced the abuse, have got experience of it with, you know, dealing with somebody else. So what is your top tip for, let's put a scenario, you've started your business and instead of getting support or even neutrality, you're getting little barbed comments, you're not getting the warm cuddly feeling you thought you might do. What's your top tip? What's the first thing you should do with that, Lee? Is that something you can go with?
Yeah, I would monitor it. for a period of time. Obviously, if it's subtle, keep a diary. I've been, you know, that's what they advise you to do, is keep a record, record incidents of anything. But obviously, if you're in danger and you're being hurt in some way, seek advice from the authorities, from the charities, contact the police, speak to them informally if you need to, anonymously. There's, you know, you can do that. Do research, look online. If there's all different types of abuse, and there's all different categories that you can refer to, and it's all abuse, and it's all equally as bad.
So do write it down. Do your homework, Laura. Very quickly.
I think you've got to just shut it out. I mean, I was just sort of put down and told I couldn't launch a business, and it turned out that actually he was very jealous that he didn't have that ability to have a plan himself. And that came out way sort of towards the end. I mean, it's strange, you know, we get on very well now that we're not in a relationship, but yeah. And it was at that point, you know, years later, I realized why he'd been so negative about me doing something, because I had the guts to do it and he didn't. So just keep that feeling burning inside.
Focus and keep going. Jackie, Nina, final thoughts.
Nothing in particular, just supportive of what everybody else has said, really.
I just think, just, you know, make sure you know your self-worth when you start. And if anyone starts chipping away at that, then, you know, that's the time to start examining and say, you know, something's up here. When you're in a relationship, when you're starting a business, if they don't help you build that business, then they're going to help you bring it down. And that's really a big warning sign.
And I'm going to have the last word. Surprise, surprise. So what I'm about is actually, it's about personal freedom through business. I believe you can get your personal freedom through running a business. If you start a business and you are having to compromise, if you are not being yourself, if you're getting that feeling, you can't be yourself, actually, you need to change some stuff fairly quickly. PDQ, in as safe a way as you can. And just never compromise on who you are.
Totally.
Never compromise on who you are, and get a plan if you need to get out so you can be who you are. Okay, we are Women in Business. Thank you very much for joining us, for being so honest, for sharing your story and for helping others. Lee Fletcher, and for just joining me and just being wonderful co-hosts and supporters. Laura Lawrence, Jackie Groundsall, Nina Christofferson. And we will see you all again next week. And in the meantime, take care, everybody. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Tune in next week to the Women in Business radio show for more stories, ideas, and inspiration to help you grow your business.